This is Northwest Reports. I'm Maliha Sayed. Today, we're talking about the spaces in Seattle that make us feel a sense of community and belonging, also known as third places. Third places are spots we regularly go to outside of work and our homes to relax and connect with others. Think your favorite coffee shop or a place of worship. The term has been around for a while, but it's felt especially relevant with the global pandemic and modern technology. In this episode, we sit down with Cynthia Brothers, who founded Vanishing Seattle, a media project that highlights disappearing institutions and cultures around the city. We speak to her about third places, including why we're seeing some disappear and the impact of that loss. So could you just tell me a little bit about who you are and what Vanishing Seattle is?
Sure. My name's Cynthia Brothers, and I am the founder of a media project called Vanishing Seattle. I started it in 2016, and basically it includes social media, Instagram, also a short documentary film series, and some other projects. And I guess the point is to kind of document the spaces in Seattle that are largely disappearing or being pushed out, small businesses, community gathering spaces. But also, I like to see it as a celebration of the type of spaces that have given Seattle its soul over the years.
What inspired you to start it?
Well, I mean, I think I'd kind of been knocking about in my brain for a while. I think around that time, I had moved back to Seattle, my hometown, from spending about 5 years in New York. And around that time, I was noticing kind of this acceleration of places that were closing and being priced out. And some of the same symptoms or like similarities that I saw when I was living in New York in terms of mass displacement and mom and pop shops closing down for like a Chase Bank or a boutique hotel, or, you know, just really, yeah, rapid change in the landscape of the city. But it was one place in particular that kind of, I guess, led me to just pull the trigger and start the count. And that was a Filipino restaurant on North Beacon Hill called Inai's Asian Pacific Cuisine. It was an area that was experiencing some gentrification. And so basically, the owner, Uncle Ernie, was getting priced out and had to close his restaurant. And I also had a friend who worked there as a server and also is a drag performer. Her name is Natasha Manila. And every Friday, she would do this amazing, like, 3-hour-long epic drag show. So I went there for the closing night, which happened to be a Friday night when she was doing her last performance there. It was full of Atasha's fans, full of longtime regulars of Inai's, and you had this really cool community of folks that were a part of the Beacon Hill community, the Asian American community, the queer community. Everyone was just like losing their mind to Atasha's performance. There was one point where she got up on a table and was performing to Effie's song from Dreamgirls, "And I'm Telling You I'm Not Going." And, you know, obviously a very poignant, powerful, defiant moment. So I took some pictures and video, and then I went home that night and I just grabbed the Vanishing Seattle handle and started the accounts. And the video of that night was my very first post. And I think my motivation behind it was I just felt it was such a magical, uniquely Seattle, hard to replicate space and moment that I wanted to document that and share that with people so they could also witness the magic of it. And also as a way to kind of show like this is so amazing and cool, and look at this community that's formed in the space, and these are the types of things that we're at risk of losing when we lose these spaces. So I really have to honor and like shout out Atasha and Inai's for kind of kickstarting the whole thing.
And we're talking today about third places, which are essentially any environments that someone would go to that isn't their work or their home. Could you tell me a few examples or what comes to mind when I mention the word third place or the phrase third place and Seattle? Are there places that kind of come to top of mind for you? They could be current environments. They could be past environments. But yeah, what does that make you think of?
Yeah, I mean, it's there's so many. I mean, I feel like Seattle historically has such a richness of third places. Yeah, you know, I feel like my definition of a third place can be pretty broad, you know, so it could be like a corner store, it could be a dive bar, it could be a record shop, a place of worship. And sometimes they can be in like unexpected places too. But I mean, some of my, just to shout out like a few of like my personal favorite third places that I think were very kind of influential in my own social upbringing, my own identity. So Busch Garden in the Chinatown International District is one of my all-time favorites. I would consider that my personal Cheers because I have good memories growing up there, eating with my family as a kid in the restaurant and the tatami mat rooms. And then when I reached drinking age, it kind of transitioned over to the bar and karaoke.
It expanded suddenly.
Yes. My whole new world. Yeah, and, you know, just aside from a place of, like, joy and fun, it was a really seminal place for my own kind of mentorship and, like, coming into my identity as, like, a Asian American activist, which I think Busch Garden has played that role for a lot of people. Like, it was a place of organizing and community building, which kind of went hand in hand with being able to sing karaoke and talk to elders and being able to hang out in a place that was super diverse in terms of race, age, income. Another one of my favorites is Rebar. You know, it was lots of fringe theater and music and weirdness. It was where I saw my first live drag. Yeah, it was a place where kind of like outsiders and misfits from like all stripes came together and, you know, led to some really influential shows and performances. Hedwig, Dina Martina, Bacon Strip, you know, stuff that's still having an influence today, even though that place has been closed. So yeah, those are some of my favorite spots. And then there's also places that are still around, like Southgate Roller Rink, Clockout Lounge. Yeah, and I think these can kind of be places that are constant or change throughout people's lives. But I just feel really grateful that these spaces were there to hold me and the people that I care about and love about, you know, throughout our lives, the good times and the bad.
We ran a story on our website about the closure of Bartels in Wallingford, but I moved to Seattle like 2.5 years ago. So my understanding of it is it's this like local chain, or actually national chain, you know, by Rite Aid. But then I was reading the article and the person who wrote about it was saying that it actually was in many ways a third space because it was communal. It was kind of an easy landmark, depending on where you lived. And it was also, you didn't have to spend a lot to be there. In recent years with COVID, it feels like that has sparked a lot of conversations about the importance of third spaces, the need to connect, the need to have community. But I also was reading an article from 2019, you know, pre-pandemic, saying that we're losing these spaces. Because you've been running the account for 8 years, I guess I just wonder how you've observed this. You know, is this loss of third spaces something that's accelerated during COVID? How much do you attribute to the pandemic? And what are some of the other factors that you think create that loss?
Yeah, that's a great question because I feel like, especially during the pandemic, yeah, we lost a lot of places and everyone's trying to figure out like, what does this mean? What's the impact going to be? Yeah, I mean, I think there are businesses that are still closing today that will say that they never quite recovered from the pandemic. But I think it's kind of it's hard to totally disentangle, I think, the impacts of the pandemic and just the impacts of like the larger economic reality and how, you know, Seattle has been really impacted, I think, by the influx of wealth, big tech corporations, speculative development, real estate, you know, just kind of the effects of like a lot of money coming in and being a so-called, this quest to become a so-called world-class city. So, I mean, a lot of places, I think even before the pandemic and then exacerbated by the pandemic were, you know, endangered because of things like rising rents and rising costs and kind of being at the mercy of a landlord who, you know, maybe was just looking to maximize profit. So, yeah, the pandemic definitely didn't help. But I think for some cases, it kind of perhaps sped up something that was already kind of inevitable. And I do hear, you know, a fair amount of frustration about, you know, I think people understand the importance of legacy spaces, and you will hear civic leaders kind of talking about the importance of small businesses, but maybe feeling like there's very little in the way of protections or interventions to keep these spaces in place. Like they're just kind of at the mercy of market forces or rent hikes or, you know, being displaced because the building got sold or what have you. So yeah, I think it would not, in my opinion, be totally accurate to just totally blame it on the pandemic. I think it's kind of a mixed bag, and the pandemic kind of exposed a lot of these inequities and difficulties that these places were already facing.
And I had this question written down because I was going to ask you, you know, what would you consider of all the places that you've documented? How many of them would you say are third spaces? But it feels like everything you document would technically be a third space to someone. What do you think about what you've documented over the years? Like, how many of those environments would you consider this quote unquote third place?
Yeah, I mean, I guess what you said kind of hits upon it for me. Like, well, every place meant something to someone. I mean, I think if you take a broad definition of it, and even if it's a place that maybe I'm not super familiar with a lot of times, or maybe am not that interested in, maybe, you know, if someone asked me to do it, or they're like, hey, this place is important to me, or I think, or this other community, or, you know, it'd be great if you did a post about it, then, you know, I'll try my best to honor that. Because, again, I kind of see Vanishing Seattle as like a collective repository and a collective documentation and storytelling. And a lot of these places, I mean, you'll have some surprising cases too, where something that might not be your typical like twee charming third place bookstore. Like I did a post on the McDonald's on Fifth Avenue North that was like by Seattle Center and under the monorail. And on, you know, and I think I might have even said in the post, I was like, I'm probably going to get a bit blowback from this because it's a McDonald's. But if you know, you know. And that was one of the most, like that and the Burger King on Rainier were some of my most popular posts, because I think for several reasons, but I feel like everybody has a story about like that McDonald's about, oh yeah, growing up and going to Deviate or Scoochie's or going to the clubs and then, you know, waiting for your mom to pick you up in the parking lot of the McDonald's, or just, I mean, it was wild. There was like all sorts of people that would go there. And so you would like see some really interesting stuff go down. You know, it was also a cheap, accessible place. So a lot of these fast food joints are kind of have become de facto like senior centers. And kids go there. And, you know, it's kind of, again, like these type of places I think are becoming less and less common in Seattle, where it's just like anybody can go. So, yeah, in that sense, I would consider that particular McDonald's and that Burger King, or even the, you know, McDonald's on Madison, or I would consider those third spaces too.
Yeah. Well, that's something that was interesting to me. I feel like in kind of researching for this and just anecdotally knowing what a third place is, I think there are some places that are intended and built to be communal spaces, but then there are a lot of places that are quote unquote third places and their primary intention is not to be communal, or it's not to be a place where everyone gathers around and gets to know each other, but just by way of like convenience, accessibility, you end up meeting the same people over and over. You end up making it a meeting spot in the same way I think that Bartels was for years and years. It just ends up being this shared space. Just interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. And like the Bartels, even though it was a chain, this is, I'm talking like pre-Rite Aid buyout. I mean, it did feel, I mean, I feel like it did have a sense of being like a local drugstore because they carried local products. I don't know. I mean, it was homegrown. It had been around since the late 1800s. The feel going there was different than, say, going to like a national chain. And then at least like the Bartels that I normally go to, which I love, the Bartels in Rainier, they've got the same employees been working there for like a decade or more. And, you know, we greet each other, know each other's names. Like I'm always fascinated by not just the impact that spaces have on people, but also that people have on spaces and how they can kind of shape that to an extent and make it their own. And again, like in cases like a chain or a McDonald's or like the Starbucks on 23rd Union, you know, it was like, I don't know if they intended it to be as much of like a hangout spot as it was. But, you know, I'd say it was probably one of the more interesting, like, cool. And I'm not a big fan of Starbucks, but like that one.
Yeah,
that was interesting, you know, like
that one's OK.
Yeah. Yeah. And now it's going to become Black Coffee Northwest. So it's like cool to see some of these spots. And then the Starbucks down by Franklin is going to become El Rinconcito, like a taco spot. So it is cool to see some of these places become, yeah, be reclaimed as small businesses or Black-owned businesses.
When we were talking about particularly impactful third spaces or third places for you, are there any in the last 8 years that you've documented vanishing that particularly hit home or that just made an impact on you growing up?
Mm-hmm. The ones that have vanished?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, and I do want to say that Busch Garden will be unvanishing. Hopefully, yeah, later this year, just a couple blocks away, still in the CID. So, and that's a really, we're going to be making a follow-up to our short film on Busch Garden about that. So that's like a really, yeah, wonderful example of an unvanishing in my mind. But yeah, I mean, another place that comes to mind is the Red Apple grocery store. In the Central District on 23rd and Jackson, it was part of that promenade complex. And that has been described as a community center masquerading as a grocery store. And it was, you know, not just me, it was especially for people who grew up in the CD. I think that was a really important affirming place where it wasn't just like a place that you go to get your food. I mean, they had a lot of food that other stores wouldn't carry, and they served the traditionally Black community, historically Black community in the CD. But they also, you know, they had staff that worked there for years and years. They did kids' haircuts and backpack giveaways. They did parking lot barbecues, and the staff would like play music. They like had the best R&B that they played in the aisles. And yeah, just like one of these places, maybe like how you're talking about Bartels, like it doesn't feel like it's a corporate chain. It's where people would come. And even after people were priced and gentrified out of the CD, they would come back and shop there. And that whole complex was bought by Vulcan, and I think closed and was torn down. And a lot of the staff moved to the Hilltop, Red Apple, and Beacon Hill. So I think like people will still go out of their way, myself included, to like see some of the staff or to kind of, you know, soak up some of that energy. When I did the Vanishing Seattle signage exhibit this past summer, I got a couple of the aisle signs and the crates on loan. And it was important to me to put that right up at the beginning of the exhibit. So when you step out of the elevators open and you step out into the space, you see that there. And just there were several people that were crying when they saw that. And I think it just, I mean, who would think on the surface, like, oh, a grocery store? But you really elicited a lot of emotions, and a lot of people, they basically, you know, grew up there. So
in these instances where maybe an establishment can't relocate or they can't return, what's the impact in your eyes of losing a third place like that for a community?
Yeah. I mean, it's almost like hard to wrap your head around or to know the full impact, because I feel like these places can be just so such a deep part and like so intertwined in people's lives, and then the way that people connect with each other via that space. So, you know, I think sometimes people have to go somewhere else or try to find somewhere else, and hopefully there is a somewhere else. Sometimes there isn't. Yeah, I think a lot of times it's like people worry that some of these third places, some of these like more accessible spots, like maybe dive bars and stuff, like they're just kind of slowly getting whittled away and nothing's really replacing them. So yeah, I think there's an impact on people's, on like the health of people's social lives and their ability to access each other and just their support network and yeah, places to find joy. And yeah, it's kind of hard again to like, it's something that's kind of ineffable, because if it is something that's beyond just a transaction, I think it goes, yeah, like much deeper on an emotional level. And, you know, these places shape people. Like after Busch Garden closed, I don't think I've done karaoke since.
Oh.
I know, it's kind of like a silly thing. I think maybe I'm just like waiting for Busch to reopen again. But yeah, like in some ways it broke my heart. So I was just like, I can't sing anywhere else until Busch reopens.
Thanks for listening to Northwest Reports. This episode was reported by me, Maliha Sayed. It was produced by me and Isaac Kaplan-Wolner. The story editor was Ryan Familiner. Our executive producer is Sarah Menzies. You can subscribe to Northwest Reports wherever you listen. And whatever platform you're listening on, please review us. We'd love to know what you think of the show. Also, if you would like to support the work we do at Cascade PBS, whether it's our lineup of podcasts, the video docuseries we stream every week, or the in-depth reporting we deliver every day, go to crosscut.com/membership. In addition to supporting our journalism, members receive complete access to the on-demand programming of Cascade PBS. For the latest political, environmental, and culture news from the Pacific Northwest, visit crosscut.com. Northwest Reports is a product of Cascade PBS. I'm Maliha Sayed. We'll be back soon with another episode.